This athlete absolutely loves running fly 10s. And they turn around and said, can we do another? And I immediately just go, nope, that's good. Let's call today a win. And I think it was such an interesting... Welcome to the Talking Shop podcast, where I'm here to share stories, lessons, and experiences in sports performance and professional development. I'm your host, Matt Tomitz, and I am here to help you take control of your sports story. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about what living in a probabilistic world means for you as a coach or athlete. But first, I want to start out with this story. Get your mind and your brain going about what the potential topics might be. So I had an athlete of mine who was coming in because they had a rainout for their high school baseball game and they wanted to do top speed work, which I was a little hesitant about because it was their first day back. This athlete runs well, not super crazy high output, but one of the faster high schoolers. And first one was a little slow. Second one was faster. And the third one, I think actually was a new PR, or it was super, super close. And after the third one, and in my head, I knew, I was like, three is probably going to be it, probably going to be tops. They turned around after the third one and they said, let's go again. Like, this athlete absolutely loves running fly 10s. And they turn around and said, can we do another? And I immediately just go, nope, that's good. Let's call today a win. And I think it was such an interesting example of, as I was reflecting, I was like, well, what would have happened if we ran another one? And is there really that much of a difference from three to four? And I know that risk of injury of pulling a hamstring or something like that goes up with more fly 10s. Obviously, that's why you can't do a gazillion of them. But really, would they have pulled their hamstring or done something like that if we had done another one? Like, does the universe know that it was their fourth one instead of their third one? But it was very interesting. As I was explaining my thought process to an intern afterwards, I was like, oh, well, there's all these factors, you know, like the quality of their output, high, but not crazy high. It was their first day back in a little while. They were already running pretty fast. It was already a successful workout because they were within their 95% and they even touched 99 or 100% of their best. So it was just very interesting explaining it all. And there's all these factors and probabilities, and I was playing the probability of today's a win. Let's not push it. I want to leave no doubt in my mind that you are going to walk out of this workout, not only with the normal gait pattern, but also feeling better than when you walked in. So in the rest of this episode, hopefully that primed your brain a little bit. What do I mean by living in a probabilistic world? I'm going to go over examples. And lastly, just what this means for you as a coach or an athlete to help you do your job better and take control of that sports story. So, operational definition, probability, a numerical description of how likely something is to occur. So if something has a 50% chance, 50% probability, well, half the time it will happen, half the time it won't. 75%, well, let's say a team has a 75% chance of winning a game. If they play four games, they will win three of them. And my own definition of this probabilistic world is everything over time will come back to its probability. So, of course, with social media and the news, the only things that get published, broadcasted, and publicized are the things that seem to contradict probability and the things that you never thought would happen, the one in a millions, because those get headlines, views, clicks, and all that stuff. But if you were to take that same example and situation and circumstance and, you know, go through 100 or 99 more simulations, well, it's probably going to come back to that original probability of it happening in the first place. But then also there is variance, right? So the reason why those one in a million things get publicized because there is variance, because there is spread between numbers in a data set. It's not to say that just because it's a 75% chance of winning, if they play 10 games, that they only win five of them. It's to say if you play 100 games, 1,000 games, it's going to come back towards 75%. So probability, probabilistic world invariance. So here's an example. So the odds of flipping a quarter and getting heads five times in a row, 0.0015%. So it's 50% chance times 50%. That's to get two in a row. So it's 0.25. And then you just keep basically squaring 0.5. But if you flip four heads in a row, and then you flip the fifth one, well, what are the odds of that flip getting heads? Well, it's still 50%. So that's an awesome example of how there's so much context in each individual flip is 50, but the odds of all of them happening in a certain sequence is such a fraction, 0.0015 of that. And how not everything has a linear relationship with the probability. Most things happen on an exponential curve. So an example that I recently listened to, Dr. Mike Isertel, who's my hero, my public speaking hero, is losing 5% of your body fat going from 20 to 15 is relatively easier than going from 15 to 10. And that is a little bit easier than going from 10 to 5. It just gets way, way harder the longer that you go. So if we go back to the original example of pulling a hamstring during flying 10s, well, the risk from 1 to 2 probably isn't much of a difference. Probably from 2 to 3, probably not much of a difference, but still more. And then 3 to 4, starting to go up a little bit, but I'm still not too concerned. And 4 seems to be this threshold just from anecdotal evidence. You know, 4 to 5, you're like starting to get a little uneasy. It's like 5 to 6. Well, you're starting to really roll the dice. And anything over like 6 or 7 with anyone with, you know, a decent output is starting to push it. And that's just simply the number of fly 10s ran. That's not even the how they ate, how they slept, previous training, stuff like that. So just some examples of how you can, there's things that happen in an isolated situation, like one quarter flip versus with all these other factors of, well, what happened the four times before and that continuing to happen. So here's a story. I'm totally outing myself right now. And my new hobby of sports betting definitely did not inspire this episode as I'm learning more about it, but we can tell I'm a big baller, high bankroll risker over here with my $5 wager. But it's funny that I was getting into sports betting and I was just scrolling and I was just figuring out how the odds worked and the lines and all this stuff. And it was Alabama minus 1,115. So I would have to bet $1,115 just to win 100. So if they won the game, I would get my 1,000 back plus an extra 100. And of course, if I bet 5, well, that turns out to, I think it was like 45 cents. So in my mind, I was like, oh, you know, and the odds, I'll do the odds right now. I should have calculated this earlier. Basically at those odds, 1,115 divided by 1,215. It's giving Alabama a 91.7% chance of winning. I'm like, oh, like this is a total lock. Like, you know, I'll just keep doing bets like this, you know, even if it's just 45 cents, well, it's more than zero. And of course, how the universe works. The universe knew that I bet on that game, and that's why Alabama lost that game. But the reason why betting on a game like that is so dumb is, first, even though they have a super high chance of winning, well, it's not 100. There's never a 100% chance of winning. Think of all the examples of sports, the crazy things that you couldn't even imagine happening. Like the first one that came to my mind was when the Red Sox came back from being down 3-0 in the World Series to win, or 0-3 to win 4-3 in the 7-game series. And basically, no one really bets those games because putting down, you know, $5 to win 45 cents, even if they do lose, or how many games of that you'd have to win in a row, you know, if you did that every single game of the season, you'd probably still be down money. But, you know, and I was like, why not? This makes total sense. And then the universe was like, haha, think again. So that was a very expensive lesson learned of $5. And in honor of March Madness, as this is being recorded Sunday, March 27, 2022, with St. Peter's playing UNC, probably started right now or in a little bit, when they first beat Kentucky. I don't know the odds of that game off the top of my head, but basically the head coach had a quote that I really liked. He said, after they beat Kentucky 15 over a 2-seed, at the end of the day, every team that made it to the NCAA tournament deserved to be there, to be here. Every team that made it to the NCAA tournament thinks that they could advance. You know, you just have to be good on this night. It's not about your record. It's not about what school you're at. It's whoever is good on that night. And tonight it was our night. You know, even if you gave Kentucky a 99% chance of winning, because you can't give 100, hence the situation. Well, if they play 100 games, they're going to win 99 of them. But it just so happened that in this theoretical universe, the one game that happened to be in real life happened to be the one that they would win out of 100. So here's, I'll start bringing in some examples a little bit more into training and sports and stuff. Just wanted to give a few examples that maybe you can make some connections on your own. But so the beach volleyball team that I used to work for, we just had the fall scrimmage. And going into the week, we knew that Saturday was going to be a super high load day. They had 3 scrimmages. Everyone was going to play because it was just, you know, half the team versus half the team. And we wanted to work backwards to plan the training week before and, you know, try to minimize monotony, set the players up to be feeling really good before they experience a lot of load. And we had a decent practice plan and, you know, life happens and the practice plan didn't go as planned. And going into that Saturday, loads were a little higher than they planned to be. Monotony was a little higher than they planned to be. And for those of you that don't know what monotony is in a load monitoring context, monotony is basically the average daily load over 7 days divided by the standard deviation of those 7 days of training load. So if you have a lot of high low days interspersed, then monotony is going to be a lot lower, which is better for recovery. Make your hard days hard, make your easy days easy. But if like every day is between like 800 and like 1,000 units, there's not a lot of standard deviation. That's going to be super, super monotonous. And the thought process is, well, if every day is medium hard-ish, well, then you never really have a low day to build your body back up. So monotony was a little higher or a lot higher than it planned to be. And 4 players ended up pulling their quads during the fall scrimmage. And that's not to say that that was the reason. And that's not to say that, you know, if they were to do another scrimmage in an alternate universe on the same day under the same circumstances, that the players would not have pulled their quads. And it's not to say that if we had managed the monotony better or maybe stuck to the practice plan a little better, that those players would not have pulled their quads. There's so many things that go into it, such as maybe they knew it was going to be hot, or because it was 1 week before the actual season, they did like a sauna the night before and they were a little dehydrated. Or there's just so many things that you just can't control. But all you know is that with higher monotony, based on research, there is an increased chance or increased probability of getting injured. Now, that probability might be 60, 70, 80%. Well, there's still a 20% chance that they don't get injured. And let's say that the monotony was managed. Well, even if the probability went down to 20% chance risk of injury, well, there's still 20% chance that it did happen. So it could be a combination of perfect storms, and we're all just playing probabilities. But you have to play the long game in this probabilistic world that we live in, that over the course of one entire season with the team, over the course of 4 years of an athlete's college career, let's say, that you are going to end up, if you're putting yourself in low injury risk situations, that you're not going to get injured that often. So Tommy, my boss, he shares this one story as he was reflecting on his recent NFL combine training of an athlete pulling their hamstring, doing like a buildup to kind of end the warm up. So it's like a 10, 15 minute warm up, you know, get hurried up, a little sweaty, you know, easy skip for 5 yards and then like 15, 20 yards, just building up some speed. An athlete pulled a hamstring during that. Now you could say that with a warm up and with some training volume and capacity built up, I would assume this wasn't in week one with this athlete, that the risk of injury in that situation probably doesn't even cross your mind, but it happened. And myself, I'm outing myself again, young, dumb Coach Matt, I had this idea of doing what I call 10 tries, just from anecdotal evidence of sometimes athletes hit their best sprint time of the day on a rep 4, 5, 6, the last one, and 10 being a round number, it sounds good. I was like, oh, I'll do basically 5 to 10 reps with my athletes of fly 10s or 5.15s. And if they keep within 2.5% of their fastest to their slowest, well, then we can keep running with appropriate rest and stuff like that. And when it was all said and done, I wanted to know which of the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 reps happened to be their fastest one of the day. Was it the first, the third, the 10th, the 9th, whatever it may be. And looking back, I definitely would not do this again. I was very fortunate that no one got hurt, but there is context of this was youth middle school athletes and only a handful of high schoolers. So the outputs were super low. I was very intentional about the rest times. So there's all these factors that, you know, let's say I had high level high schoolers or college athletes. Heck no, I obviously wouldn't do that. But I had things built in like the 2.5% cutoff. It was younger athletes. Now, looking back, would I have done this again? Probably no. But, you know, I had a situation where could an athlete have hurt something? Maybe some of my older athletes, yeah. And then my boss had a situation where it doesn't even cross your mind and someone hurt themselves. So here's another example. So the transfer effect coefficient. I got this concept from Matt Ray, who's now with the New Orleans Saints. And basically, you can calculate how much an exercise transfers to the goal exercise. So, for example, sprinting. What lifting exercises transfer the best to sprinting? So basically, you take the result gain in sprinting divided by the result gain in, let's say, split squat. Now, there's context in this. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to use this little formula right here on the right, and that's going to be how I calculate it. You know, if you read this article, and it's transference of traditional versus complex strength and power training in sprint performance by Loturco and colleagues, Loturco. You know, one of the main premises of this is the transfer effect coefficient should be used only when the subjects were not exposed to the target ability during the strength / power training period. So basically, if you want to see how much sprinting or split squats help sprinting, well, you can't be sprinting that much anyways. And just because something might have a higher transfer effect coefficient, well, you're going to have high responders, you're going to have low responders. Well, what is their training age anyways? Could they just look at a barbell and get stronger and so facto become faster? But although you're trying to create a probability, right, this transfer effect coefficient, that doesn't mean that you toss everyone on this program and it's going to transfer, let's say, like 70%. And there's high and low probabilities. So based on some of the examples that I shared earlier, you know, a high probability is going to be resisted running will help improve speed and technique, or doing resisted sprints. Most people could probably get on board with that. Now, a low probability of success or a high probability of increased risk of injury. Now, let's do 10 fly 10s just to build some capacity. You know, let's start with 5. And then for the next 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, the next workouts after that, let's add one more just to build our capacity. Be like, I don't really know about that one. Not sure if you're getting my stamp of approval. But it's not to say that everyone will have the best improvement with resisted sprinting, or it's not to say that doing an extra fly 10 every workout won't build capacity, but there's just a lot of factors and contexts behind it. And whether you're picking cues for certain athletes, there are general cues, right? Big shapes, knees up, toes up, versus very specific ones. You know, talking with my mentor about athletes who are super toesy when they run, right? Super developed calves, just very toesy. Well, during a lot of the A series, A Marche Skip A Run, he'll actually cue them to be flat-footed. But because they're so toesy, they'll never actually get to be flat-footed. But when they try to, you know, like that's only a super isolated circumstance. And even if you have a group of three or four, you have to specifically say, hey, I'm cueing this for you and this for you. Like, don't listen to what I'm saying to anyone else. I'm only talking to you. And there's, of course, the risk-reward ratio. So, you know, doing fly 10 work, top speed work with middle schoolers, high schoolers is going to have a much different ratio than with the NFL combine guys. And I think that there's a super valuable quote, you know, live to sprint another day or live to lift another day. And we're in sports performance and training for increased performance. We're trying to increase our abilities today to set us up to do it again tomorrow or whatever it may be. If we sell out for more gains, there's more fatigue, more increased risk of injury. But if you play the probabilities, you say, you know, you're a sophomore in high school. We have 2.5, 3 years. We're just going to live to lift, live to sprint another day. And we're just going to keep stacking these days. So what this means for you is that you can't guarantee anything. You can't guarantee, you know, Alabama playing against a not good Texas A&M team is going to win every single time. You can't guarantee that an athlete with a decent training age doing a skip to build up sprint is never going to hurt themselves. You can't guarantee that if you manage training monotony that no one will ever get hurt. And that's just even to say that, like, saying injury prevention, that's not a term. It's like injury risk, because you can never say, you can't point your finger on anything and say that's because this happened or that's because this didn't happen, because there's so many factors. And when something does happen contrary to the probability, well, you have to do some more digging. And maybe this is for the next slide, but, and consequently your language should reflect that you can't guarantee anything. You know, this is a conversation we always have at TC Boost, where I'm currently coaching, is you can't sell out on PRs, and you can't make that your main point, or really a big point of your marketing and your advertising and stuff like that. Is just, oh, we guarantee, you know, you'll drop 0.4 on your fly 10 in the first 3 months. Well, if a kid is already starting out at a 1.0 fly 10, which I have had someone do that on their second workout in the facility, well, are they going to drop to a 0.6? Or if a youth athlete is running a 2.0, could I hope that they'd get down to a 1.6? Yeah. Well, what if they show up once every other week for those 3 months? Or what if on the day of the pretesting they happen to run really fast, or the day of the post or the pretesting they happen to just run really slow for whatever it may be? So you can't guarantee anything. All you can do is guarantee, hey, if you're in here twice a week, you're sleeping enough, you're eating enough, I'm going to be checking in on that. I really believe that we can get you to where you want to be. Now, let's say they check off all of those boxes and you come up a little bit short of your goals. Well, then you just have to step back and reflect and be like, oh, where did I go wrong? I thought I was doing all of these things. And I guess this takes me to my next bullet point. Over the course of 6 weeks, 3 months, 6 months, 4 years, you know, high school, college, what is the probability of success? If you're choosing all of these things that have a good risk-reward ratio, they're a lot more rewarding than they are risky, or you don't roll the dice probability, you don't roll the dice that often of, we'll do another one, why not? Versus, based on factor XYZ, based on our conversations that we had in the warm-up, we're just going to live to sprint another day. We're going to stop it right here instead of doing another one just because. If you stack a lot of those things that have good return on investment, ROI, of a good probability, well, chances are, living in a probabilistic world, things are going to come back to that probability. So action steps, last slide. First, list out everything you believe in. So if you believe in simple stuff, like 50% velocity decrement on the 1080 sprint or resisted running or hitting top speed work at least once, if not twice a week, that there is value in just doing technique work on recovery days. Or if you believe that there's value in going from 4 days a week of training to 3, ask your colleagues, hey, what's your hottest sports training take? Or what are some non-negotiables for your stuff? And then you could put a percentage on, you know, what is the probability of my kids getting faster from resisted running? I don't know. I would say 90, 95%. And what if there's one of those, you know, 100 athletes, there's those 5 that it actually makes their technique worse. Or, you know, they start having Achilles issues because they're just not ready for it yet. You know, there's just so many things. But it's to say, if you took 100 athletes, right, percentages are out of 100, how successful would it be? And next, you know, what factors carry more or less weight in your mind? You know, being very intentional about talking to my athletes in the warm-up and saying, 1 out of 10, how are you feeling today? I'm just starting to accumulate all of these little pieces of information that can lead me to be predisposed when we start running to maybe cut it short, maybe let it fly. Should I be on high alert if they're not feeling too hot, whatever it may be? So I could ask them how they ate that day, how they slept that day, how their body's feeling. Oh, you're sore in your legs? Well, where in your legs are you sore? Is it your quads? Is it your hamstrings? Whatever it may be. And there's all these things, like if they didn't eat anything that day, well, that probably weighs a little bit more than if they happen to get 7 hours of sleep instead of their normal 8.5. Or if they played 4 games this past weekend and it's a Monday, that's probably going to carry more weight than them coming from like a 1.5 hour practice beforehand or just happening to hit some baseballs beforehand. Next, explain your thought process. You know, it could be to an intern. You could tell them like, hey, you know, make a list of questions of things you heard me say or things you thought I was going to do, and I want to talk through it afterwards with you. Or you could go to the complete extreme on the spectrum and talking to a significant other and be like, hey, you know nothing about training, assuming your significant other doesn't do training. I decided to end our top speed work after 3 reps with my high schooler. It was their first day back. This is why I made this decision. This is why I talked to them. If it makes sense to a complete stranger, foreigner to training and speed training, well, then chances are you're on the right path. You know, another thing that I've learned is that anyone can argue and justify basically any side. You know, anyone who says, oh, well, there's a 90% chance of us getting better by doing resisted running, well, someone could easily say, oh, well, there's a 10% chance that they don't. Let's try to pick something even better. You're like, better. 9 out of 10 athletes are going to get faster doing this, you know, and chances are it'll be obvious which ones don't. And then you can kind of go from there. But last, because language shapes everything, language shapes culture, is figure out where you can improve your language to better reflect the probabilistic world you live in. Are you emphasizing PRs? Do you speak in absolutes? And this does sound a little technical and a little nuanced, a little nitpicky, but it is. It is important. You know, I'll put an athlete on my story and I'll say, hey, this athlete has done a great job. We reached a goal of running a sub-1 fly 10. You know, it took us 4 months, but we got there. And not that 4 months is long or slow or whatever. That's just the example I made up, because that's a goal. Now, I can't say guaranteed 4 months work, you'll get to a sub-1 as well. Or if I cherry pick an athlete that already ran a 105 at the start, well, that's not the probability of me only working with athletes that started at 1.05 fly 10 is not very high. Or if you always talk about, you know, like let's say an athlete is running pretty well and they run a PR basically every other week, well, then they're going to assume, if you overemphasize that it's going to keep happening that way. But knowing variance, knowing that speed improvement happens exponentially. So maybe the first 2 weeks, you'll get a 0.1 improvement. The next 2 weeks, you'll get a 0.5 improvement or a 0.05. The next 2 weeks, you'll get a 0.025. As you as you approach kind of your speed limit, you know, it gets harder to make those gains. So that's why it's important. But you want to set not only yourself up as a coach, but also your athletes up for the most success and having a really good understanding of what you believe in. You know that there is probabilities of things not working out, but if you stack choices and training sessions that have a really good risk reward ratio and a really good probability of getting you faster and closer to your goals, then you're on the right path. So I hope this makes sense. If you're into sports betting, I'll tell you my picks and you just do the opposite, because that's kind of how my luck is going. Just kidding. Maybe I'm not. But hope that makes sense. Happy training.